Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Ram Trucks, the ones with the guts to stand apart, join a league all their own. Guts, glory, Ram. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 299 for August 21st of 2015. Meet the 3,000 horsepower Blue Viper. Watch Autoline After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Gary Vasilak, how you doing?
Good. How you been?
I'm doing great, actually.
Busy summer coming to a close?
Yeah, and it's going into a real busy fall.
Mm-hmm.
Real busy.
Mm-hmm. And last week we were in Seattle driving Tacomas. And,
that was fun.
It was a lot
of fun. We can talk about that later in the show.
We should
let everybody know Jim McCraw's in the house with us.
Howdy.
Good
nice
to have
to
you.
Be back.
Yeah. And we've got Jim here because our guest today is Van Conway, and we're going to be talking about straight line racing. I think McCraw probably knows more about that than Gary and I do.
Combined,
we'll give it
and
a multiple.
We'll give it a shot. But Van Conway, thanks so much for coming in and joining us on Autoline After Hours.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So we've got this Viper in the studio, and this ain't like no Viper I've ever seen anywhere. This thing's got obscene amounts of horsepower, right? How much power are you pushing out of it?
Well, we can adjust it, but suffice it to say we can get it to 2,000 plus.
2,000 horsepower.
Plus the adjustment. So you figure a stock, that's on the tire. So a stock one is, what, 650 now would be 540 on the tire, 540 versus 2,000 plus.
You're talking at the tire, not just at the end
talking
of the
tire. At the tire. That's we measure the horsepower on the dyno at the tire.
So tell us about it. I've never heard of straight line racing before, and this is not drag racing.
Well, it's a derivative of it, but I mean, straight line racing, we're giving an example, like the TI calls the Texas Invitational's run twice a year. And they have a format a little bit similar to the hydroplanes. You know, the hydroplanes circle around, they got to be close, and then they flag
them. For the start of the race.
Right. Well, what they do with the Texas Invitational, and there's different format races, but this race, twice a year, it's April and October. They adjusted it due to rain. That's where I think everybody recognizes the winner is officially crowned the fastest street legal car in the world. And that
where is this?
The winner of that race is the official crown the fastest street legal car.
Yeah, but where do they run the cars?
They run right outside of Dallas. There's a track right there. You know, made by Waco, but I forget. You know, we flew to a private airport coming in, and it's invitation only. And the format of that race is a 60-mile-an-hour run-up, and the Christmas tree is right there at the 60-mile-an-hour point. And if the cars are no farther than 3 feet apart, you'll get the green light. And then you run for 1,500 feet, so about a quarter mile. So you're not coming out of the hole like the old days, drag racing, Milan Dragway, or wherever street you were on as a kid, Woodward. You're 60 miles an hour, and if you get the green light, then you go. And so you run 1,500 feet. And that's their format. When we raced in Chicago at the Chicago Go Fast at the airport, when that car beat all the cars, that was from a dig, from the hole. But it's on the airport. It's on an airport strip. So we run a half a mile there. And you go right through the trap speed, and then they flash the speed up. And so now what happens at Texas Invitational is you have seedings on Friday. So depending upon what you run, you'll have your seedings. And then Saturday, you'll run. And then Sunday is the rear-wheel drive. Now, we run in both. This car always wins the rear-wheel drive.
The Viper
on Sunday. But on Saturday in last fall, when I couldn't make it, we lost in the finals to a GTR, which is a four-wheel drive car. And this June, which was supposed to be April, or it was late May, but due to weather, if they see weather coming in, they'll push it off. We had mechanical problems on both of them. So we'll be back in the fall at the TI. And we initially thought that the Lambo and the Viper would run one and two in the finals because, I mean, this car is perceived to be the first or second fastest. Now, what happens every winter is guys are going back to their ad more. So whatever you saw in the fall, you're going to see more. And then you have companies like, you know, Underground Performance, which is in the business of upfitting Lamborghinis. That's their business. You have Alpha, that's in the business primarily of GTRs. And you don't see a lot of people that you read about, Hennessy and Switzer and a lot of others, but that's their business. And so that's their show car to really get you to take one of their horsepower packages.
So conceivably, just by changing the rear end gears in this thing, you could run quarter mile, half mile, or something. I was fascinated. This spring I went to the Ohio Mile. It's a former DHL terminal that they bailed out on, leaving a 13,000-foot concrete runway.
You need to buy 11,000 for that race.
The people who used to run this thing in South Carolina said, wait a minute, let's go up there. So they run these mile-long events.
You ever run a mile event?
No, but here, and I'm glad you mentioned that. But we're looking to do that. But we're going to get Oscoda, which is a closed military base here. And we think that that would have enough to run a mile because you need a significant runoff. But the reason why I'm glad you mentioned that is this car, the Lamborghini, is built to try to win all three, set all three records. And no car's ever done that. I don't know if you remember.
You mean quarter mile, half mile, mile.
No one car has ever done that.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what you saw was the top speed there in Ohio when you were there. But Hennessy advertises in Texas that he has the record, and it's 280.6 or something like that. Interesting to note, you know, that's a Ford GT kind of car that he's modified. And realize a lot of cars don't get up to full speed in a mile. So full speed is full speed. But in a mile, most cars won't get there. And anyway, he claims to have the record. We think that car runs north of 280.6.
You mean the Viper here?
Yeah. We think it's, you know, it's a lot about horsepower and weight, too. So you got to look at horsepower and weight. Interesting, that Ford GT that he claims world record and runs a 9.2 quarter, that's probably about an 8.0. Okay. The world record in the quarter now has been moved because people make faster stuff here. And again, we're talking about street legal car here, is 7.4. We think the Lambo's going to run about a 7.1. And the half, by the way, is miles per hour. Don't ask me why. They go from a time in the quarter to an MPH in the half.
And the mile, too. They don't
MPH, that's right. That's right, because your distance is just a mile. So whatever you get up to. And we think the Lambo will be north 300 when we run it. And 240 and the half would set the world record in under 7.4. Now, I say that with hesitation because we didn't run well in late May. We went back to the shop. That car's up and running. The Lambo's getting ready to go again. And you got a gear, but it's the same car, though. And see, that Ford GT will never do well in the quarter mile. So it's a 9.2 car. So you got to run the low sevens to get in the hunt.
When you start with a Lamborghini, is yours a Gallardo? Or?
We prefer a Gallardo Superleggera. In fact, there's one outside there.
The lightest one.
It's the lightest one. You're exact. So when you take a power plant of this on that car there, Nth Moto are our guys who do all the work out of Minneapolis. They're geniuses, okay? That's a 3,400-pound car. You overlay that in a V10. That's a V10. But four-wheel drive and launch, 500 pounds lighter. So just do the math. If it works, right, 500 pounds, four-wheel drive, and it's got launch. This car, when we won in the half a mile, we had Lee Sanders, the driver from Road and Track, run the car for us because us amateurs freeze up a little bit around 200. the world record, we set the world record second time out in Chicago. It's 213 and four decimal points. But, you know, you GoPro everything. So you GoPro everything. So one of the things is him shifting that thing. You pull straight back. And the car burns a lot because, you know, it's rear-wheel drive and the four wheels jump out on you. But it didn't sway at all. See, because everything's been changed in the car. People think in the old days we would just add some horsepower, and we'd figure out how to get some horsepower. But we didn't change anything else. When you go this radical, everything's got to change because the car just spin around. But if you saw that video when we won, he hit rubber in four gears, but he never swayed. And the GTR jumped out on him. And then we passed the GTR at about a 3/8. And, you know, the guys who know a lot more than me say that the V10 can take in a lot more punch than a V6. okay? At some point in time, the V6 can't carry all that punch. And so that's why the Gallardo Superleggera is, you know. And by the way, I think they have the half-a-mile record, okay? They have the half-a-mile record, underground performance. You call it a UGR car, the high-end package. And Alpha's car, they call the Omega, they don't sell that car. They sell Alpha packages, but not that car. And so there's a lot going into who's going to win.
Typically, let's say you go out next season for May and October in Texas and maybe a couple other events. Are you switching sanctioning bodies? It all seems a little bit localized in terms of, you know, the Texans have their rules, the guys in Chicago have theirs, the Ohio Mile guys have theirs. Is this going to just kind of go on like this until sanctioning body says, wait a minute?
Yeah, well, I don't know, because, you know, you do have the NHRA and quarter miles, but it's kind of still kind of loosey-goosey. And the reason why I laugh when I say that is if you ever were to do something like this in the street, you'd have to agree with the guy, well, what are we going to do? We're going to roll from second. We've got them from third. What are we starting at 50? And guys will pick the thing that's most beneficial to the car. Like, you wouldn't want to be started at the high end of second gear, right, because you'd be shifting right away. But the other guy might want to start at the high end of second gear, okay? So to answer your question, you know, I don't – you're going to see races from the hole. That's just, by the way, how we grew up, okay? But, you know, I would say that the format of the run-up with the 1,500 feet, the 60-mile-an-hour Christmas tree, that's probably going to stick around. And, you know, these races occur. You have the TI, which I think is the most recognized. However, there's other races where, you know, your time will be officially sanctioned, okay? So, you know, that wouldn't say, well, look, you didn't run it at the TI. It has to be official in a sense. It has to be some sponsoring body who's not your, you know, your brother who has the stopwatch.
Van, you said that you drive this car. This is a street legal car, but you don't keep it in a garage somewhere and have somebody polishing it all the time. You just take this out and drive this car.
Yeah, you can drive the car. I mean, you wouldn't want to.
But this is not your daily.
You wouldn't want to drive it to Cleveland, but it would theoretically last. But, you know, the more power you put in a car, you lose reliability. But
right.
The car, this car in particular, they've kind of joked about for a year and a half now, maybe two. You know, they joke about it because everybody shows up with their trailers. And this car, you know, this car is more drivable, we'll say, than theirs. Like they don't have a second seat. You can see we have another seat in there. So I don't know if they have a radio. We have a radio.
Air conditioning.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the Alpha Omega yanked all that out for weight purposes. And we wanted to be able to drive it occasionally when we want to drive it, say, on a Sunday. Okay. And so I wouldn't own it if we couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I going to take it to Chicago? No, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, I might take it to Grand Blanc and mm-hmm. get up on the expressway.
And you drive up and down Woodward in it.
Yeah, you get up on Woodward. But people know the car guys. The Blue Viper's known nationally. When we set the world record in Chicago, remember, we were never supposed to beat the four-wheel drive foreign cars. We were never supposed to win. So they were kind of in shock. And what was interesting about that, I had to go back on Saturday, but my partner was there and my son was there, is the guy sponsoring the race. Once you go in the lead in these now, you sit. A lot of formats, you sit. Now, the TI was seatings. But if you run and you're ahead, you just sit. So we ran on Sunday. I was gone, and we ran 2:13 and 4 decimal points. And we're just sitting, right? And finally, the sponsor's car, and I want to highlight the sponsor's car, you go through a trap. It's like a radar gun. It hits it right like that, right? It goes through the trap. And there's a 6 or 8 second delay, about 3:30 on a Sunday. It ties us to 4 decimal points. Now, it took 6 to 8 seconds, and everybody knew what happened. And everybody, that's it's like
no
a batting
ties.
Title. Nobody's ever tied for the batting title, right? No, so they knew what happened, and you can see them lighten up, these guys. Like, come on, are you kidding me? But what my team did was cool, and I wish I would have personally witnessed, but I know they did it. Here's what they said. There was hundreds of people there. We're not supposed to win. They say they tied us. We said, light them up, turn the gun off. Line them up. This car, your car. Guy at the end's going to win. And you know what they said? No.
Wow.
We're prepared to lose or win, but we're prepared to let the people know officially. Mm-hmm. They kind of know, but no officially. Look, we'll just line them up. Mm-hmm. Turn the trap off, and we'll just, and the first guy to the end will be the winner.
How did you get into this?
Well, first of all, you know, my partner and I just go back to the day when this was what we did in Detroit, and with our, well, we had muscle cars, and we raced, and we did all sorts of things, and you know, it's just, I think it's part of our blood here for a lot of people. We just enjoy it, and you know, this car is an amazing car because the Viper makes what's called an ACR, and that Viper is the fastest production car in the world at the Nuremberg race. Okay, I think there's 72 turns there. You probably know, but it's a $100,000 car. Coming off the assembly line in Hamtramck, right? And it's beating million-dollar cars. It's a stock car. I have one. It's a derivative of this car, but it's a stock car. And for $100,000, and for you know, when you look at the Z06 today, honestly, it's a spectacle of a car. It's an amazing car for the money. Amazing. And this car here, you know, I would say at the TI in May, we didn't mechanically work well. But you'll see a lot more Vipers there. You didn't see the American cars before. The Vets, for some reason, aren't playing. Okay, I don't know why. The Porsches don't play. It's the design of the car. You're really going to see Vipers, GTRs, and Lambos. That's in the end, you're going to see that. You'll see an occasional Mustang or a Vet. But what we saw this May was we saw a lot of Vipers for the first time. And this is an engine that for technical reasons as a mechanic, it can take a lot of power in there without exploding. And, you know, people call it the Blue Viper. If you Google it, it'll show up. And it got a little aura to it. Now, we lost a little aura when we didn't run in May. But the thing's ready to go. We'll take it back in the fall to the TI. And, you know, it's just, this is a hobby. Some people do a lot of things. But I've always been into cars. We've got other cars that are fast. They're not like this, and this is not really fair. But we have a lot of cars that are just fast. Not compared to that, but what would be.
So yeah. So what's your real job then, if this is your hobby?
Well, my real job is going to work and paying the bills.
And, doing what, though?
And I run Conway McKenzie, and we're based out of Birmingham or Detroit with offices around the country. And we're in our 29th year now, believe it or not, still around as one of the founders.
The company does what?
And we do distress company advising companies that are not functioning well, from crisis chapter 11 to, you know, pre-crisis, and we assist companies who are underperforming make more money. Calls turnaround consultants, crisis management. We have offices in basically every major city here. Our headquarters are here. And, you know, at some point in time in our company, and back when I was a partner at Deloitte, half our work was automotive in this area. Sure. Now we're probably about 20%. But, you know, we all, growing up here, we know Roush, you got Lingenfelder, we got a good clan here. And it's the stuff as the American cars are really amazing what they do. The Hellcat's not that fast, but 707's pretty amazing for $60,000, if you think about it. Because a lot of the price of a car equates the value to the horsepower. Okay, and it's amazing the value that they're selling cars for with this kind of power. When you think in the old days, like 400 horsepower was a lot of horsepower. No, it was outrageous, I think.
Okay. But I mean, it seemed to me that if I were, you know, like as John and I mentioned earlier on, I mean, this is something we're not all that familiar with, but it would seem to me that it would be, you know, a Charger or a Challenger or a Camaro or, you know, an earlier generation Mustang that would be doing this straight line racing. More than something that's more of a...
Well, you could make them into a drag car. Any car could be made into a drag car, but then it's a silly car. You're not going to have a wheelie bar. It's not going to have a license plate. It won't be street legal. But the Hellcat's 4,700 pounds. Mm-hmm. You're dead on arrival. I mean, you're talking 1,300 pounds versus 3,400. Now, maybe a Vet, but, you know, you're talking about just way too much weight. The GTR and you heard that they got their car to 2,600. I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact, but GTR starts at 3,800. And the weight of the car is a huge issue. So when you put 707 on that, it's going to run better than something with 600. But my CTSV, which is an amazing car, and Lingenfelder made it turn into 700 in conjunction with General Motors. And I drive that car all the time. I love that car. Here's a business car, four doors with 700.
Did you go to work in that car?
No, that car's a fine car. You take car anywhere. Now it's a little louder than you like, but I like loud cars in Detroit. I'll never get a new electric car, and maybe the next generation will. But there's something about when it doesn't make a noise. I don't care if the car is free. It's just not what I want. And the Lingenfelder is very loud. It's got a full GM warranty. Roush had the same affiliation with Ford when they did the Mustangs. And, you know, that car was 85,000 hours delivered, title, license, with that uptick in my driveway for 85,000 bucks. I mean, that's a lot of vehicle, okay? For, you know, their stock 551.
So is this one. I think you should put salt tires on it and take it to Bonneville. See.
Well, you know, I talked to my partner really about that, but the issue there is the salt, I guess. But I brought that up because, you know, growing up, we always read about the salt flats. And it is hard to get enough runoff for a mile. I don't know what you need. I think you might need close to a mile for a runoff here. And we run at airports before, okay? Because airports are good. But remember one thing about an airport, and I thought about this in Chicago.
Quick, because we're running out of time.
Is that a jet takes off and lands about 1:30, right? So the pavement's meant for that. We're going about 100 miles an hour faster than that. So the pavement's nice and wide, but it's not pavement necessarily intended for something moving that quickly.
Okay,
but
well,
anyway.
We've got to catch up. We'll be right back.
You already know that you can listen to Autoline's Industry Insight in places like YouTube and Stitcher, but did you know that you can also listen to it live in your car? It's simple. Just pair your smartphone with your vehicle's Bluetooth connection or plug into the aux jack. Then navigate to Autoline.tv using your phone's browser. Find the show you want to hear and click play just like you would on your computer.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy.
It's that easy. Never be disconnected from Autoline's top-notch insider information with Autoline on the go.
Okay, we're back. We're talking with Van Conway about all this straight-line racing, which I had never heard much about it. Now, whenever I see any race car anywhere, they're covered with all kinds of decals and sponsorship, and this is going back to the old days when you just sort of run what you brung.
Well, maybe we're so early on that, but we're kind of private about it. But, you know, when Alpha's running and Underground, you know, they're running on behalf of those companies. Okay, so they're really representing those companies. So any company that's in the business. Now, we have Nth Moto. It does our work, and they're the best, okay? And they're on our truck, and they're all over this car. Everybody knows the Blue Vipers with Nth Moto.
And it's Nth Moto?
Nth Moto out of Minneapolis, and those are the guys.
And they're the ones who built this car.
They're the guys that figured it out.
And I got to say, because I went around the car before the show started, this is beautifully done. This doesn't look like a whole bunch of stuff just bolted on. It's very well integrated.
Well, they'll do a lot of their own fabrication. Like I said, for a car like this to not spin out, it's been redone everywhere. And quite honestly, they're the brain behind everything, because the owners really are, hi, how you doing? But the ego goes with the people who build it. And again, you're running against companies that this is what they do for a living. If you want the highest package from Underground, you need to give them a Lamborghini and I think $300,000, I think. And you'll get the highest horsepower package they'll run. The difference is our guys do one off, okay? So they wouldn't sell many of those packages, but they might sell five in a year. You know, I'm talking about the highest horsepower package, 2,000 or so. Alpha does the same thing. So I don't know if it gets to advertising. You know, it's guys with a hobby, and I'm not doing it. I mean, I don't want to pass up money, but I don't want it. I want stickers on the car. You know, I don't view that we'd ever have that.
So is there wagering on there's races going on? You got some skin in the game here?
You know, some guys do. We don't. Okay. But, you know, suffice it to say, in southeastern Michigan, nobody's going to bet against that car. I mean, you know, everybody today is attached to the Internet and Google. So, you know, you realize that there's not a lot of disclosures. It wasn't that specific with you guys. But, you know, you're not going to race something you have no chance. I don't have any other cars. I mean, the push had the Lambos being done, but I'm not interested in a race. I have no chance. And we wouldn't race somebody that's inappropriate. So we avoid street racing because of the law. The kids are kind of wild and crazy, but my partner and I are very respectful of that. Maybe in a certain circumstance we'll look at it, look at the situation, but we're not going to hit the gas pedal on Woodward or places where there's families or somebody could go out of control and somebody gets hurt then. But 25-year-olds are fearless, but the two old guys here, man, we're not just going to do that. So, you know, gambling, when you get to the TI, it's more than money now. It's about who's got bragging rights. So the money really doesn't matter at that time. And again, these are commercial companies that are bringing there to show they know how to make the fastest car. And then they sell these packages. So,
but you do it for the speed?
I'm sorry?
You do it for the speed rather than the commercial aspects of it? I mean, you do it because you really enjoy and
it's fun.
Exactly.
It's fun. It's like going boating. I'm not going to put a sticker on my boat that says U.S. Army, right? I had a fast boat, I have fast motorcycles. So we'll put a sticker on your boat, U.S. Army. Remember that car that was not a Bud car, but it used to be a green car. You drove it all year. They gave it to you. Maybe it was a beer, I forget. And it was like, you know, and yeah, you're 22-year-old guys, you want a free car, so drive the thing around.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you could attach an ad to anything, I suppose. You know, my
business. The way it is now, it's the Blue Viper.
Yeah.
Very similar in its way now to what the Silver Bullet was in its day.
At Woodward.
Everybody knows the Silver Bullet.
Everybody.
67 Plymouth Hemi that was very rarely beaten on Woodward Avenue, if ever. So now we come down all these years later, and now it's the Blue Viper. Don't mess with the Blue Viper.
We would wager against the Silver Bullet if they're interested. But, you know, everything's relative to the time when they ran 13.5, right? And it's crazy now because really when the Bugatti came out at 1,000 horsepower, it's kind of the standard, if you will. I mean, you have Dodge making a 707 horsepower, $60,000 car. And you know, the Bugatti ran a 9.9 quarter and 255 in the mile. It's all in road and track. And it's a special car, but $2.8 million better be special. So you're right. It would be somewhat similar to that. I would say that, you know, we're also respectful that we don't want to really put ourselves in a situation where somebody could get hurt in Woodward Avenue and things like that. And number two, you know, we're not going to race anybody. It's not worth it, right? I mean, you got to tell us a little something about why you'd be worthy. It'd be like me wrestling, Sue from the Lions. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so, you know, there's a lot of knowledge, particularly the younger kids, about, now my partner and I are older, but like my sons are involved, and they know everybody. They know everybody at the TI. You know, I don't want around to talk to anybody. First of all, it's pretty hot. I'll sit in my trailer, which is air conditioned. But there's a whole group of people out there that know everybody. They know, there's people who know a lot about it, because it's not 200 cars. It's really not in the whole country when you get to this level.
That's by invitation only.
That's by invitation. But you're talking about cars. I mean, every year, I mean, you're talking 1,200, 1,300. That's not going to play anymore, okay? 2 years ago, that would have played. And, you know, some guys run out of money and some guys blow their cars up. And, you know, we wanted that car to be reliable. Now, that car is really probably more reliable than any of the ones we race against, okay? We would drive this car on the street. We have driven the street. It was driven here today. Some of the companies I mentioned, they wouldn't be driving the car. They'd trailer the car. And, you know, so we want it to be user-friendly. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's going to bounce around a little bit in there if you hit the gas. But it's really intended for both uses.
Well, you mentioned before that, I mean, this V10 was developed as a truck engine first.
Yes.
So it has thick walls and huge cooling, and it's made to go for hundreds of thousands of miles. So a good basis on which to apply fuel injection and giant turbos.
Yeah, you're talking about a 10-cylinder that's built like a Sherman tank, and that's what they say. That's what the mechanics say. You can put a lot of power in this thing. There's a breaking point for every car. Well, back in the day, when you go too far, you blow up the engine block, and there's a breaking point. But this engine, this block can take a lot. And our problem we had in May was not that problem. It's some miscellaneous, I want to say a clutch or something, but it wasn't an engine problem. Okay, the engine has been very reliable, and you know it's tested often. But this car goes back to back and forth to Nth Moto for diagnostics, and they check the brain and see what happened. And it's a very sophisticated process, very sophisticated. So we think they're the right guys. We had a little misstep in May, but we're going to be back in business in October.
So I got to believe, even though you hire somebody to drive in the race itself, like you say, some of us get a little queasy over 200 miles an hour. I got to believe you've had this thing out at quite a bit of speed.
Well, of course. but again, you know, we got to be law abiding and we got to be careful. And
well, you got to pick your spot.
Well, what's interesting on that point is, you know, when you head into Detroit down Woodward from 8 Mile, it opens up to 5 lanes. Or 4 lanes, wide open there, right? Once you go south of 8 Mile. And so we Friday night, we were just playing around a little bit, and you can't go where there's congestion. But believe it or not, once you get south of 8 Mile, it's kind of wide open. And there's like an extra lane or two. But funny thing is, my partner, there's some Detroit cops in the road, I think by 7 Mile. He pulled over and he asked for permission. And they said, go for it. Well, we're Detroiters. Come on, man. There's nobody here. I said, go for it. Well, we got permission. So, probably, you know, we hit him.
I love it.
It ends pretty quick. It's not something you're cruising at a high speed. We want to be very careful. We're not going to run like the kids. We're going to survey the situation, and there might be a situation where we might go hard. But all in all, you know, we want to win at the track, and that speaks for itself. Because anybody can jump you, right? When you get street racing, they'll jump you. Or they'll back off early. Say they jump you in the lead, they see you coming, they back off and said they won. And when guys are going to lose, they might do that. And let's just, if we stay at the track, then there will be a determination of the winner by not us. And that's really what matters. Mm-hmm. So, but there's a lot of good people in it. We've met a lot of good people. My sons are met a lot of people that are closer to their age. And, you know, I think there's a lot to say about America in cars, you know. There's a lot to say about what we are.
How many people do you feel are competitive with you?
At this level?
Yeah.
Well, UGR is always going to be competitive. They're going to make something to be competitive.
And so how many cars do they have? 5 cars?
Well, they might show up with 5. They'll end up with 2 when they run the parts off. Right. You know what I'm saying? So this UGR is a company. Now, UGR Lambo could be me. I could go get one, and then I got to change it. I think Alpha Performance. Okay. After that, there could be several other companies, okay? And there can be new ones, too. But, you know, they're larger companies. They do this for a living. They don't put two. They'll put 200 in your car. They'll put – Lingenfelder will add 100. He'll add 200. It was kind of a – I would like to see Ken get in it because I think he's an amazing guy. He's got some amazing stuff. And Roush, because I'm a Detroiter. So I'd like to see – look, the best car should win anyway, mm-hmm. okay? But they make unbelievable stuff here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it depends. It's really – I would say by the time you get there – it's a pretty good idea who's going to be in the hunt. You know, maybe 5 cars.
So, Van, we got a few questions here that have come in from the audience. Armin wants to know, what wears out the most, the engine, the tires, or the trans? Got to be tires.
Well, we switch tires all the time, see, because tires are a safety issue. Mm-hmm. So we don't wait for the tires to be look like they're just swapped out. So the tires are changed very often. The engine is technically not supposed to wear out, so technically. And the trans... You know, the tires wear out first because we change them. Mm-hmm. The trans probably theoretically before the engine.
Gotcha. AMC Pierre Card Interior wants to know, what are the tires?
Well, we have different ones on the front and back, and I don't know which ones are on there now. Now, we have a lot of tires that we move around here. They're different sizes, and they might not even be the same. I'd have to look at them. But those tires are meant to race. Now, we put different tires on maybe if we're going to drive a lot in the street.
Yeah.
But those are the race tires, and we can get you that information because there's really an answer to what tires you put on when you're racing. That, and we change tires all the time, and we don't keep them long because of safety.
Okay, we got a question from MCon25 who says, who's the fastest driver in the family? And I see here it's actually your son, Matt, asking the question. And he says, you better tell the truth.
Well, no, that's really interesting because, first of all, we're getting into a level of parental negligence. Let me start with that. And I would say that Matt's 20, be 25 this month, and Kevin's 22. They've been with me for a long journey of everything's fast. Our motorcycles are the fastest in the world, too. Okay, so that's parental negligence, all right? Now, I would say that I would defer to my partner, but there's been, I would say Kevin was clearly not as good as Matthew, now there's road racing and straight line, so road's a little different, but I would say the best answer this dad could come up to is they're equal.
What about you compared to them?
They're better.
Oh, you did tell the truth.
I might be better at another form of racing, but I don't want to get into that. Okay. But in terms of straight line racing, they would be better. And I would say that they practice a lot more than I do. Because my second son's still in college, and the other kids got out. And so we have other pretty fast cars to practice on to see what happens is when are you going to get afraid? The cars could try to scare you.
We're getting down to the end here, but Steve B. wants to know, did you ever worry about safety, especially with your son's driving?
Well, I think about that, and I do worry about that because, when they're at a high speed, now when at the track, a lot of bad things can happen at the track. Then we're going to jump out of a plane. Where does it end? We're not going to scuba dive. So I don't let my son jet ski, for example. I don't let him too, but I let him go hard on the track. And probably a lot of parents say something's wrong with me. But look, this is how we were raised. And I do worry about that. I ask them a lot of questions about scenarios that they might consider when they shouldn't do it. And they know the rules here. They know this. This dad will take it away if you break the rules.
Dan Conway, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It's been awesome having you here, and especially with your car in the studio.
Thank you very much.
Really cool. I learned a lot about straight line racing.
Absolutely.
I didn't know anything about it before. So.
It's an amazing that we could do this against cars that are 3 or 4 times the price.
Yeah.
And, I'm really a patriot when it comes to American cars, so I don't know. I do have a GTR, but that's an exotic, and I can get my arms around that. But
well, good for you, and thanks again for coming on.
I'm glad I could be here. Thank you.
Feel the calling to build something great.
From Shanghai to the Silicon Valley, the auto industry may make news around the globe, but there's only one spot to get your daily dose. Check out AutoLine Daily at AutoLine.tv, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. AutoLine Daily, for the concise word on everything cars.
So we're back. So, Jim, you saw this kind of racing before. Of course, you're a hardcore drag racer from way back.
And we're waiting all over the country. There are thousands of men and women waiting to hear about the salt because it got flooded a few weeks ago. And
you're talking about the Bonneville salt
flood. The first meet was canceled because it was in 6 inches of water. But they're manicuring it every day and looking for another meet to happen September 17th. But, yes, and I mentioned the Ohio Mile. It was hilarious.
Why so?
Just thousands of people showed up to watch these cars, and they run them one at a time. It's not even a drag race, so that there's so much room out there. If the car spins, it'll just spin and spin and won't hit anything.
So Jim, are they cars like this, or are they muscle cars?
Every kind of car you can think of.
How'd you find out about it? I've never heard of this.
A friend of mine needed to go down there to test his car pre-Bonneville back in June. They had a June race. They have one a month, and I thought, a mile, 13,000-foot concrete runway. There ought to be some pretty good bite. And the fastest car down there went 235 miles an hour. And everybody said, oh, okay, 235 is nothing.
What kind of car was it? Do you remember?
It was one of the things that they do is they buy up old NASCAR cars, which are already, they already
got the
have
whole
a
roll
cage,
page, everything, right?
The tank, all the stuff you need. Build a fresh motor for it, put something other than NASCAR tires on it, and take it down there and run it. And with, gearing has an awful lot to do with how fast you go.
Mm-hmm.
But a friend of mine, Wayne Jessel, the famous Jessel Brothers team, he went 226 and said, okay, good. And that if they had time, they would put a smaller engine in it, a bigger engine in it. Once you have the car, you can go in all kinds of different classes just by changing the engine. It takes 20 minutes.
Wow.
And so in Bonneville, when they get it ready for racing, what kind of car is your friend going to be having down there? Is it the same sort of NASCAR sort of thing?
Or? No, it's a 1955 Mercedes-Benz Gullwing.
Ooh,
wow.
This will be, I think, his 12th attempt to set a record. He's from Rochester. His name is Bob Cerna, and he's a great pal, and he tries really, really hard. But
I love this stuff. I mean, I love hearing it, and I love hearing about these are individuals doing it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Van, okay, he takes it out to this place in Minnesota he was talking about. What was it?
Nth?
Nth Moto.
Nth Moto, which I hadn't heard of either, so I'm learning a lot on the show today.
But I
love that this is individuals doing it. It's not some big corporate effort.
No. And there was everything there, being real honest to God, rat rods. They show up just to spectate, drive around to people, ooh and ah. There was a guy down there with a diesel rat rod, first one I've ever seen. It's just the machinery and all mm-hmm. kinds of machinery, and everybody's real relaxed. You know, you run one car at a time. There's no side-by-side. There's no worries. And they just click them off every few seconds, and you hear that, you know, absolute full throttle. And they don't have to worry about elapsed time. So they use the first couple of hundred feet to make sure the thing is steady and got traction, and then off they go in like third, fourth, and fifth gear.
Wow.
And you can hear them winding and winding and winding all the way down. It's terrific. And it costs $5 to get in.
Jeez. That's
awesome. And generationally, is this right across the board, or is it?
Absolutely. There were, you know, kids on trikes and grandparents and old dudes like me, the whole spectrum. Everybody in, you know, hot rods. There was a guy down there with a beautiful 32 Ford, had an Alpha V6 engine in it. Maybe the only one in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Detroit. He heard about it. He drove down to see what was going on. A great, and now, like I said, they have one every month now, from April until October, I guess.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is going on in the world, John?
Well, we got to ask Dr. Data.
All right. So
Gary always brings in some interesting tidbit here.
All right. So not last week, because that was Dream Cruise week, so we didn't have an after-hour show. But the week before that, we had Jason Fogelson, who wrote the book about 100 things every gearhead needs to do before you check out. So one of the things was the Peterson Museum, okay? And the Peterson is undergoing restoration, and there's some phenomenal restoration that's going on in the place. Now, the place, Ben, could you show the picture of what this is going to look like, the
holy
overall?
Holy.
So that's Peterson.
Weird.
Now, I know Jim is probably more familiar with the Peterson than any 10 people that you might know. So as part of this refurbishment, they're going very high tech with this thing, and I thought these numbers were astounding. They are using 68 miles of data cable in this building for 25 new exhibits. There are six.
Haven't they heard of Wi-Fi?
Well, but that's for your Wi-Fi.
Okay,
so 1,600 LED lighting fixtures. They're going to have 45 Panasonic projectors. They're going to have a 130-foot-long display in the Hollywood Gallery. Now, remember, this is in Los Angeles, so Hollywood and high production values are key. They'll have an 8x20-foot storyboard.
Oh, my God.
They'll have a 160-foot-long wall with 12 projectors in the Grand Salon. 134-foot, 180-degree wall in the Motorsports Gallery, so you're basically going to be feeling like you're driving one of these cars that Jim's talking about, and 43 touchscreen kiosks, okay? So I was reading all those numbers, and you know, to your point about Wi-Fi, they actually have cut this deal with Pixar, and they've developed these, they're calling them car pads, so it's like an iPad, but it's modeled after the Pixar movie Cars,
mm-hmm.
and so they're going to have those characters involved. But, you know, I'm thinking, so our friends at the Henry Ford, I mean, they're going to have some catching up to do to these guys.
No kidding.
So,
no kidding. Boy, I'm impressed by what the Peterson Museum's up to.
The man in the middle is an old pal of ours named Terry Lee Cargis, and he has the chops. He's been around cars his whole life. He worked here in town for Roush Performance for a long time. Before that, he worked for Disney. He understands show business, and he understands cars and high performance and how to get there. And his board of directors is, as far as I know, 1,000% behind all of this. There was a lot of gnashing of teeth when they announced this huge renovation, because they had to sell some cars out of the collection to pay for it. And there was, but now that's, you know, those cars are gone. There's still plenty of cars. There will always be plenty of cars, but they're going to have this amazing building in which to work their magic. Mm-hmm.
Well, they needed to, right? Because weren't they had? They've always been bumping into financial issues. I think this is something that a lot of museums struggle with.
Yes and no, John, because Mr. and Mrs. Peterson left them an enormous pile of money. And it was a question of what do we do with it? Do we try to stretch it out for 100 years, or do we make the big move now and just change the whole? The Peterson was across the street in a former Orbach's department store. And then it moved to the south side of the street to the second version. And now this is the all new one, same location, but it's just so completely different.
Man. Boy, speaking of money and selling cars, did you see some of the prices that the cars sold for at the Pebble Beach auctions?
No.
I mean, so there was a 1964 Ferrari 250 LM that went for $17,600,000. And there was a 1961 Ferrari 250 GT SWB California Spider that went for $16,830.
That would be short wheelbase. That's what SWB means.
And you said that one went for how much?
$16,830.
$16 million.
Million.
Okay.
Million.
Yeah.
I think that of the top 10 money wise, 7 were Ferraris. I mean, that's just the way it's
very
going
rare,
to be.
And that's why the prices are so high. I mean, there's, you know.
Yeah, I think there was
you could probably buy a
Porsche,
building in Los Angeles for that, no?
Porsche, 2 Jaguars, and 7 Ferraris, I think, were the top 10 overall money getters.
Ferrari, McLaren, Jaguar, Ferrari. Bentley,
I
and
forgot
I think
about
that might
McLaren. Sorry
that might be
that.
10. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And that's not
five,
an old
six,
McLaren.
Seven,
that's
eight.
A relatively new
and
one.
Ferrari, yeah.
So.
And but that's insane money.
That is crazy money. But those are the kinds of cars that will maintain their value even in the future.
Maybe.
I guess
it's a tricky.
It is a tricky business. But if they're rare enough.
And these were, you know, onesies and twosies.
Okay, we're going to take another break right now. Give a shout out to our sponsor at Ram. And we got more to talk about. And we'll be back shortly to talk about it.
I talked to Terry the other day. Early December.
We could tell you about the years of research and development. How he forged advanced high-strength steel to make the frame stronger, yet lighter. The countless hours spent testing the suspension and tuning every sound from the engine to the trunk. But until you get behind the wheel, you have no idea. The completely redesigned Hyundai Sonata.
And we're back. So what else, Gary? I know you were interested in what Lexus and Toyota are doing about about no haggle price.
Yeah, it's so Scion has been offering this pure pricing plus process whereby, you know, you get a price for the car, you take it into the dealer, and the dealer has to honor it. And so now Toyota's announced that they're going to be going down that road as well.
And Lexus has talked about doing that.
And you know, and it's a limited number of dealers. It's a thing that they're starting out
not forcing everybody to.
No, and one of the things that Toyota's point is, and this is a thing that people at Scion discovered, is that younger people, they want the buying process to be much quicker than it ordinarily is when you go into a dealership. I think they found that the average amount of time it takes to buy a car is on the order of 3 hours.
Yeah. Four.
and they want to get down to one or less.
Yeah.
So magic words, sign and drive. That's what they want.
Yeah.
All the financing is arranged, everything. You just sign the papers, get the keys, and leave. Yeah. Apparently, that's what they want.
So, I mean, doesn't this sort of change the whole model of going to a dealership and buying a car? I mean,
what's it going to take to get you into this baby today?
But they won't be able to do that, will they? I mean, throwing the mats, you know, that whole thing?
No, I think they'll be able to do that. But, yeah, who wants to spend, even if it's 3 hours? I'm bad about standing in line and waiting. I can't stand that
on
stuff.
On the flip, though, John, once you have the key, this is where I think mistakes are made every single day in every dealership in the country. The guy who sold the car, I think, has a moral obligation to sit in the dealership and show them everything in the car. Husband and wife, mom and dad, Joe and Susie, whoever. And then pat them on the butt and out they go.
Yeah, but after I've been at the dealership 4 hours, I'm not going to sit around and listen to some guy.
Well, no, I agree.
I want to get in my car and go drive.
Front part should be about 15 minutes. Then 45 minutes to an hour explaining everything in the car. Then I think that's a properly sold unit. But
right.
The guys who just finish the paperwork and throw the keys at people, that's not doing the right thing.
They're not doing the right thing. But the problem is that cars are not only the most regulated consumer product in the world from a design and engineering standpoint, the dealers have to go through an enormous amount of paperwork. And that's what they're trying to do now, is get you at home to get on your laptop or your smartphone and do all or much of the paperwork at home, so you spend less time at the dealership. The bad news is you're not reducing the amount of time it takes to buy a car. You're just reducing some of the time that you spend at the dealership.
Don't you think, though, that, I mean, and everybody, to my knowledge, maybe not Lamborghini, but almost everybody has a configurator on their website.
Right.
You can spend that quality time on your own laptop figuring out the color, the interior, the options, the packages, and find out what the price is. That's what you're supposed to do now.
Right.
But, you know, part of this whole thing, though, is that, you know, they're moving to this no-haggle pricing model that Saturn had.
Mm-hmm.
And
see what it did for them?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I'll tell you.
No,
but the question is that were they ahead of their time?
Yeah.
Is that what it came down to?
Well, you know, it turns out that, you know, part of the public like me, I just want to go in, know what the price is, I'll pay it. I want to know that everybody's paying the same price,
right,
by the way. But there's a lot of people who love to haggle. I mean, they love it. They're not going to buy anything if you tell them the price. That's just the starting point. And they like...
So what do they do when they go to Kroger's?
They go to any other place, right, and they got to pay what the price is.
Right, I mean, it's...
But haggling
Apple
is
famous for, this is the price.
Yeah, get out of line.
Apple does that. Swatch Watch has done that. They never couldn't find that discounted.
And the two biggest camera companies in the world, Nikon and Canon, always the same price.
Really?
Whether it's B&H in New York or Hollywood Camera, it's the same price.
So it depends on the commodity, in this case cars. And, you know, houses fall in the same category.
Three of us should ever think about cars as a commodity.
As a commodity.
No, but think about it. A house is unique, okay? A car has a set of parts, and each part has a price, right?
Yes.
And you combine the whole thing together, and there is a price. There is a real price. A house?
Yeah.
You know, the house next door to yours is different than your house, and... That's
you're right.
Different.
But getting back to Saturn, those customers loved no haggle pricing. They loved it. Now, having said that,
unfortunately, there were only a few thousand of them. So
No. Saturn's real accomplishment was in sales and customer satisfaction. It wasn't in the product. The product, in fact, the very early Saturns were kind of mediocre cars.
Mm-hmm.
They got better afterwards, but it was really the sales satisfaction, customer satisfaction that worked brilliantly, and no haggle was a part of that. It really was. But having said that it's a no haggle, you bring in a car for a trade-in. Oh, now you're going to haggle
over
that. That's
where the haggling goes on.
Oh, now you want to do your financing. We can haggle over the interest rates. We can haggle over the down payment. So even though they said it's no haggling, there's actually plenty of haggling that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just set price. It's not no haggling. This is the price of the call.
Right. On so the MSRP,
the deal is separate from the price.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So.
But again, a lot of customers, a lot of people like the idea of I'm paying this and I know that the guy behind me in line here isn't going to get it for $1,000 cheaper.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, it's somewhere, don't you think there is some influence here being exerted by TrueCar?
Possibly. But, you know, TrueCar is running into a lot of problems right now and a lot of backlash. In fact, you know, on our television show, we did a program where we had some dealers and they were very anti-TrueCar.
So why don't we explain to the people who don't know what TrueCar is how this whole process works?
Okay, you sign up for TrueCar and you say, I want to buy a car. What are people in my area paying for? Yeah.
So I want to buy a Chevy Malibu. I live in southeastern Michigan.
Right.
My zip code is 41170.
So you go with TrueCar and you sign all up and you go, and they'll tell you in your area, here's the bell curve. And some people at the very high end are paying full sticker. Some people at the very low end are getting tremendous discounts. And then there's everybody in the middle. So now you can go in armed with this to your dealer and say, here's the price I want to get on this car. And where the value to the dealer is once you sign up as a car buyer with TrueCar and they get all your data and they know what you're searching for, they will provide that sales lead to dealers who participate with them. So that's why dealers sign up for it, but they pay like $300 for every lead.
So the dealer pays $300 for every lead. So I go in with a sheet of paper and it says, okay, this is the price I want to pay for the Malibu.
Yeah.
And now they have to honor that or they don't have to honor
that? No, they don't have to honor it at all.
Okay.
And in fact, the dealers that we had on this show who are none participating with TrueCar said, don't believe the TrueCar thing. You can absolutely come in and negotiate a better price. Don't believe that the price that TrueCar gives you is the price that you should end up paying. Mm-hmm. If you go in and haggle, this is the dealers telling us this. If you go in and haggle, you can probably get a better deal than what TrueCar says you will get. But again, everybody likes some sort of comfort blanket. You know, I want to know that Consumer Reports said this was good. I want to know that Car and Driver and Road and Track and all said that this was good. I want to know that J.D. Power blessed it. And I want to know that TrueCar said, here's the price range I should be paying. And so when people go in to buy a car, it's a big outlay of money. You're going to be paying for it for years and living with this. Everybody wants to know they're making the right decision. And there's so many damn cars and models. How do you keep track of it all?
Interesting. Our colleagues at, I'm pretty sure it was Autoblog, very recently, within the past few days, they ran a piece about the 10 cars that lose their value fastest.
Yeah, they're probably all electrics.
These were all gasoline.
Now you're opening another can of worms here.
Bought these cars, they kept them for a year, and went back to the dealership and said, I want something else. Do people do that?
They do.
And they eat a big wad of money, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some dealers, I know Penske in the past has done this thing, you know, take the car home, keep it over the weekend. In fact, I think he might have given people up to a week. You know, if you just decide, no, this is not for me, bring it back, we'll give you all your money back. Now, not if you've racked up 1,000 miles and dent, you know, well, none of that. But
General Motors had that, 24-hour test drive for a while that they were offering?
Right. Because automakers know there's a general rule of thumb in the industry. For every four people who walk into a car dealership, one will end up buying. So all you got to do is get more people to come in. And that's the big trick. How do you get people to come to your store? So, yeah, give them free test drives.
75% chaff, 25% wheat. That's how they run their whole business.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, that's a rule of thumb. It's not hard and fast. But generally speaking, I mean, this is one of the ways that, Chevrolet can, at least in the past, have, gone ahead and done a Corvette, a halo car. You do a halo car that brings people into the showroom, and they go, ooh, that is so good. And they walk out, You know, it's something.
Driving a Spark.
A Spark, right. But maybe it's the same red as that beautiful Corvette. And in the past, Corvette used to lose money. Today, I don't believe it's losing money.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think so. It's selling very well, and they've got it priced pretty well, too. But in years past, that's how one of the key reasons how General Motors justified continuing to lose money on a Vette is because it brought that many people into the showroom.
Hmm. They could probably do the same with free hot dogs.
Well, we'll have to see now how Toyota and Lexus actually manage this for a while, and they may throw up the white flag of surrender in less than a year, say, no, this wasn't it.
But it seems to me that there are more and more buying services that are coming up. I mean, you remember AAA, you can get a price for a car, you can go to Costco and get a price for a car. And I think that people begin to realize that...
Costco.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you see what their annual sales volume was?
No.
Approaching 500,000 cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Costco.
So you figure 500,000 cars, and these are people who have a set price for the vehicle that they're going to buy. So the next time they buy a car or they talk to their neighbor, you know, so...
Well, what's so fascinating about the Costco one is they don't do it to make money. They do it as a service to their customers.
Local dealers.
Now, you know, legally, they still have to go through a dealership to make it happen. But, you know, Costco goes right to the fleet desk and says, hey, I got 500,000 people here. What kind of a discount are you going to give me?
Right.
And they get that discount and they pass it on to their customers. But they don't really make much money at all on it, which is... just so intriguing about their business model.
Mm-hmm.
They make it all up in the meat.
Right.
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what else is going on, Gary?
Well, John mentioned electric cars. I think the game is afoot. I think that we're going to begin to see action. Audi announced this week about their showing the...
E-tron
Quattro concept, an SUV that they'll be... showing in Frankfurt.
Right, and, here we got the sketch up on the screen.
And you know, it's very interesting to think about it from this point of view, that basically what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we got to get this thing out there because Tesla.
Tesla's kicking everyone's ass.
And they'll be coming out with their SUV.
Right.
Therefore, we've got to show that we have our SUV.
Right.
And so, you know, now you're going to begin to see more and more and more of this, especially from the German manufacturers.
Especially from them. So what do you think? When BMW, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche all have their EVs out, is Tesla going to be able to take it, take the competition?
Well, okay, we could use an analogy here that might be far-fetched, and I know that our friend Anton will have a cataleptic fit as a result of this, but...
The guy who follows everything that Tesla does.
Everything Tesla. Now, okay, so think of it this way. Okay, Apple was able to stay in the computer business despite the fact that you could buy one from Dell, and you could buy one from HP, and from Gateway, and from da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right?
And by the way, they charged the highest prices.
And they charged the highest prices, and why was that?
Because the design.
And it was exclusive, and it was designed. And this is the thing that, when we talk about Tesla, I don't think we give them enough credit for their design. I think that's a beautiful car.
Yeah. I'm with you all the way. The interior, the exterior, the way they engine. I mean, the first time out, a bunch of Silicon Valley guys designed a car that well.
Well, remember, the designer is Franz von Holtzhausen,
who designed the sky and the
solstice.
Mechanical
systems, too. I mean, everything.
Right. Well, yeah.
But it's a gorgeous.
No, I agree with you, Jim. No, I'm not trying to put them. I greatly admire. What Tesla has achieved, greatly. What they've achieved is so hard to do. But we'll see. At some point, they got to start making money. Because
right.
They can't just keep running to the banks and the stock market to pay their bills.
But the thing is, it seems to me that when you have Audi, when you have BMW, when you have Mercedes, when you have Chevrolet, when you have more and more of these companies
that
are...
All of whom have even deeper pockets than Elon Musk.
Right. But the point is that once you begin to have more of these vehicles, it begins to validate the technology.
Correct.
It begins to cause the technology to proliferate.
Look at the... And you heard it last week, Gary. The Toyota Tacoma, you know... Out comes the Chevrolet Colorado, the GMC Canyon. What happens to the Tacoma? The sales go up 20%, just to your point. Got a whole lot more interest in that segment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a smaller, less expensive car that now has a 200-mile range,
yeah.
I mean, that's enticing. That beats 40 miles by a factor of five.
Well, I know, but again, you know, you're comparing a $100,000 car to a $35,000 car. The $100,000 one, you better do that.
To Gary's point about the general acceptance, people were not interested in a 40-mile electric. It was just not enough margin for or stopping. Mm-hmm. But at 200 miles, if you have the right job situation, you can go all week without ever plugging it in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I kept saying earlier on, they have to find that right cadre of near suburban people that wake up one morning and say, why am I buying gasoline? Mm-hmm. I charge the car all night. It costs me a buck. 1 gallon of this stuff costs me $3.50. I think I'll just go with the electric.
Yeah.
If your job, life situation will tolerate it, why wouldn't mm-hmm. you buy a clean, quiet electric car? Well, it only goes 40 miles. That's why.
That's right.
Right. But I think we're just at the cusp,
the tipping point
of this.
I agree.
This is all going to change, and I think Elon is just going to be smiling with
I hope they pull it off. I really do. And, you know, they've got to get their battery costs down significantly. That's the whole.
It goes with volume, right?
Gigafactory.
Well, he's got the Gigafactory and all that. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And, we did an interview recently with the California Air Resources Board. You know, electric, you know, they want fuel cells now. Mm-hmm. So who knows where this is all going to go? And then we had the Acades Power guy here, mm-hmm. you know, a piston engine, half the size, half the parts, 50% better fuel economy, no extra cost. And now you decarbonize some of that fuel, and now you got a CO2 footprint that's starting to challenge the so-called green guys. So who knows where it's all going to go?
Did you see the piece that was in circulation in the last few days about international global standardization?
Of what?
Everything.
Oh. Okay.
All the safety, all the emissions. They've been trying to do this for
rots a ruck.
Make it cheaper
time.
Though, right?
But the new plan is,
let's hear it.
It passes U.S. Why can't I sell it in Europe? Passes EU6. Why can't I sell it in the States? Right. It passes JIS. Why can't I sell it in Argentina?
Because
if
all
it
the bureaucrats.
Passes the home market standard. Why isn't it legal to sell it elsewhere?
My entire career, the industry has been talking about this, largely through the SAE. Why can't we just standardize everything through SAE? It's an international organization. It's the technical people. Let's do it. And then the bureaucrats get involved. And it's like, wait a minute, you're not going to put me out of a job. We agree that we should all standardize on these regulations. Now, all of you other countries around the world, you agree to standardize to my system. And then the rest of the countries go, no, 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 no. Everybody should standardize to our system because it's the best.
Right.
And nothing gets done. Nothing mm-hmm. gets, and it never has. So, you know, Euro NCAP and U.S. NCAP, very, very similar.
But not the same.
Euro NCAP cannot pass the U.S. standard. The U.S. can pass Europe, but not the other way around. You know, the U.S. has got the toughest emission and safety standards. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just say, hey, we got the toughest, just adopt ours. Europe will never do it. Japan will never do it. China will never do it.
You know, and just think about it. When you go travel to England, you have to have a different plug for your electronics. And then when you go across the channel, you have a different plug for your electronics. And then when you go to Japan, you have a different plug.
Yeah,
and
those
and
are we a all, few dollars.
Nobody's standardizing
no,
on
no,
this,
but
right?
Here's how stupid it is. Ford brings in the first generation Transit Connect to the United States. Oh, our NHTSA, they don't like the way the windshield wiper pattern goes. Ford, you've got to modify the arms because we don't like the way the wipers go. And you've got a CHIMSOL, center high mounted stoplight, and we don't like where it is. Move it over 2 inches, why don't you? It's like, really? You got to be kidding me. You don't like the swipe of the wipers and you got to move a taillight 2 inches? This is beyond stupid. But that's where we're at. And I don't. Over my dead body, is this ever going to change? That's what the regulators say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great. This has been a 50-year-long discussion. Zero progress has been made. Zero.
It's so expensive.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And if the regular populace figured out that the median price just went over $30,000, that's what a new car median costs these days. If everybody got upset and yelled and screamed at Washington, NHTSA, maybe the regular people could say, we don't want this. Fix it.
And what the safety advocates and the environmental advocates would say is, yes, we have the best. Europe should compromise to ours because we're going to have the cleanest air and the safest cars because of our regulations. And Europe's going to go, no, 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 no. We've got this gigantic organization in Brussels dedicated to finding out the best rules and regulations.
And we actually
are not going to go with what the people in Washington say.
In a couple of weeks ago, we actually heard from former guest Oliver Schmidt about his saying that he liked the way that the emissions regulations were done in the United States. And the Europeans were not very happy with his comments on the show about that.
Right, right. Well, what Oliver said was that in Europe, regulations are politically based, while in the United States, he says they're scientifically based. So, yeah, he was saying everybody should. In fact, he was saying the Chinese are starting to look at maybe not going with the European standards and looking with the U.S. ones. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
Yes.
But anyway, guys, we should wrap this up. Very interesting show, all over the map. Lots of stuff, but I learned a lot about straight line racing today.
Can I drive the Viper out of here?
Well, you're going to have to talk to Van Conway and his people to see if they'll let you. But
that is quite a piece of machinery, capable, ultimately, he said earlier, of 3,000 horsepower.
Right.
How long the crank will turn?
10 seconds.
At 10 seconds.
That's why they were saying it earlier. At the end of the run, pow, go full power like that. So. Awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. But great having you back, Jim.
Yeah.
Nice to be here, as always. Thank you,
Gary,
John.
Good seeing you, too. Okay. Let's do it again next week.
Next week.
Okay.
Shall we?
You heard us. We're going to do it.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion. Ram Trucks. The ones with the guts to stand apart join a league all their own. Guts. Glory. Ram. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
Visit our website, Autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at Autoline.tv.